Witcher. You butchered bodies in the streets of Blaviken.
You're a beast!
You endangered the girl.
You took the law into your own hands. The right one.
Hello and welcome to Watching Witcher.
I'm Jim Bob.
And I'm Joe. And together
we're one drink in.
If this is your first time joining us, we are One Drink In. We host a series of companion podcasts to popular television shows
and comic books and possibly anything that suits our fancy.
Yes, and growing.
And hopefully it suits your fancy too.
But this particular podcast is focused on Netflix's The Witcher.
Yes.
So, Jimmy, what's your familiarity with The Witcher?
My familiarity with The Witcher is mostly the Netflix series. I've played a little bit of the video games, Witchers 2 and 3 specifically.
Oh, there you go.
I haven't read the books, but I would like to at some point. I probably will, coming soon. But right now, for this podcast, we're mostly just focusing on the TV show.
Indeed.
The Netflix show.
I have heard of the video games.
That's a start.
I own Witcher 3. Mm-hmm. I have yet to actually play it, but
I know that struggle.
I've been it's been recommended to me on numerous occasions.
It's pretty fun.
I'm a big fan of Elder Scrolls Skyrim, and I'm told that this is on par with that, if not superior.
It's similar, but there are some big differences. So, like, I think the best analogy I've heard is that Skyrim is sort of like Lord of the Rings. Or if Skyrim is like Lord of the Rings, then The Witcher is more like Game of Thrones.
Mm.
If that makes sense. So like Skyrim's all about like you're the destined hero and bringing down, saving the world from the dragon and whatnot.
Got it.
In The Witcher, it's more like you're in a shitty world and you're trying to do the best you can and, you know, I don't know, to make hard moral choices.
That's okay. I can see that. And you've watched the whole series at this point.
I did. I just couldn't help myself.
Yes, you're a binger.
I did. I mean, how can you not be? Like, Netflix makes it so easy.
They certainly do. Mm-hmm. I am a virgin. I've only seen one episode in preparation
for this podcast.
So, yeah, we'll have a good little dynamic here. I'll be a first timer. You'll be a little more familiar with the storyline.
It'll be like The Odd Couple, but not at all.
Not at all. Now you stay on your side of the room. So the synopsis for Witcher is hostile townspeople and a cunning mage greet Geralt in the town of Blaviken. Ciri finds her royal world upended when Nilfgaard sets its sights on Sintra.
Yes. So one note, Geralt's name is pronounced Geralt.
Geralt.
Yes. Geralt of Rivia. There's also a female character named Yennefer, not Jennifer, but Yennefer.
Oh, great.
You know, it's the books are written originally in Polish by a Polish author, Andrzej Sapkowski. Not Sapkowski. I can't remember his name. Mm. But anyway. So all the names of places are either Polish or, you know, made up, being it's a fantasy novel. So, yeah, pronunciation's a little fun there.
Do we know about when the books were written?
So I heard that I think they started in like the mid 80s. Mm. And then they'd only been more recently published in English. And I think that probably coincides with the popularity of the video games, because when those came over, audiences wanted to look at the source material more because they became way popular.
For sure. What platform is Witcher, the first Witcher?
Ooh, I think it's available on PC. It might have originally come out on like Xbox 360, I think. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. That one I haven't played, and I've heard that it's like difficult to play, or like, you know, I don't know. I don't know how well designed it is and all that. Like I said, I haven't played it, so I don't know a whole ton about that one.
Got it.
Witcher 2 was on, I think, the 360 as well, and PC and things like that. Witcher 3 is pretty much on everything. It's even on the Switch now.
Right, I saw that. Yeah.
Yep.
Very cool. I'll have to get it on the Switch and not play it. No, I do want to play it at some point. All right. So the episode opens with a wounded deer and some spider creature.
Well, like first we got this like long shot of the deer drinking in the swamp. Mm-hmm. And it's like serene but dark.
Right.
And you're like, okay.
Like, a lot of fog. And
yeah, this is kind of a really long shot. And then all of a sudden, like, bursts out of the water this spider monster zombie.
Do you remember the name of it?
The creature?
Yeah.
I don't.
It's not Kakamora, but it sounded like Kakamora.
Kikamora. So there's like, I think they call it a few things. So like a Kikamora in the games was like a lesser vampire, but this didn't look like that. It looked like a zombie spider.
It did look like a spider monster of some type.
I'm going to call it a zombie spider for now.
Zombie spider?
I don't think it's a huge plot point, this particular monster. So. No.
The Kakamora in Moana were those coconut looking monsters.
Ah.
So I'm hoping that they'll show up at some point in the Witcher series.
Maybe he'll get a mission to go to the South Pacific from fantasy world Poland.
Yeah, it takes a little vacation away from all this.
From Blaviken to Moana.
Yeah, so he has this battle with the spider creature, and we get to realizing that he's not a normal human.
Definitely not. They show that pretty early on. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, he can hold his breath for a long time, while fighting. Mm-hmm. That's not easy to do. He's like pinned under the water for a while, reaching for his sword and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, after he kills the beast, stabs it through the head, we kind of see his face and he looks pretty scary.
Yeah, a little demonic.
Scary looking dude, yeah. So he's got like blacked out eyes and like visible veins like on his face. And so that's like, apparently that's what happens when he drinks his potions. They like have this toxic effect that changes his appearance a little bit and gives him certain buffs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
His potions?
Yeah, he has, witchers have potions, yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, so he ends up defeating the giant spider monster, and then you see the wounded deer, and he looks over at it, just says, "Today's not your day." And then we hear some slicing noises.
Yeah, and yeah, and this deer, like the wound, you know, I feel like the effects in this show are a little spotty.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed, like sometimes things look a little weird, like that deer's wound as it's sitting there looks a little digitally like clone stamped on. Mm. But yeah, you kind of wonder like which of those crazy sharp appendages struck the deer. You know, I don't know.
Well, it's probably better to do CGI than to actually tear out a piece of the deer's flesh for Netflix's, you know, show.
Fair, but
my gripe is
not that it's CGI, it's that it's noticeable CGI.
I want practical effects, damn it. If you're gonna kill a deer,
let's get Jim Henson's people in here.
So that you kind of establish the character of Geralt pretty instantly. We realize that he's a pretty powerful dude.
He's a monster hunter. Yeah, and we find out like after that scene, he rides into town with the remains of the creature, or at least some of it, on the back of his horse. And I guess that's kind of where we learn a little bit more about who he is.
Yeah.
Because he walks into a tavern and everybody's like,
they all kind of recognize
him. We don't like your types around here.
Right. Get out. And he's looking for the alderman.
Yes.
Yes.
So like the village elder, basically. Mm. We have aldermen even today.
We do. And they also purchase dead beasts.
Purchase monsters from monster hunters. Yes.
For a hefty coin.
A few crowns, I think was one of the units of money somebody mentioned.
Couple crowns. Okay. There you go. So he's looking to sell, but yeah, they don't take too kindly to him. But one of the, he ends up, Where did they go? In the bar. They cause a stink, and then the woman kind of shuts it down.
He's asking where to find the alderman, and the bartender, like, First, there's a barmaid he asks, and then like apparently the proprietor of the bar like yells at her, and is like and goes up to Geralt and is like, you know, get out of here, mutant. We don't like your kind, and blah blah blah. And a bunch of other dudes stand up and just like start trying to pick a fight with him for no reason.
No reason.
Because he's got weird eyes, I guess. He's got weird contact lenses. So they're talked down suddenly by this woman at the bar. Who we find out is named Renfrey.
Yes.
And for some reason, she commands a lot of respect here. So, and then she buys Geralt a beer.
Yeah.
And they have sort of a mini conversation.
So they drink beer in Sintra?
They drink beer everywhere, sir.
Anything like skooma?
Not that I know of. In the games, there's a lot of different beverages you can get, like, you know, ales from different places. They're usually named after the place they're from. Mm. But yeah, so this is the show starts. Where is it? Blaviken.
Blaviken, I think. Yeah. Yep.
And so I guess it would just be like Blaviken ale, probably. I don't know. It's probably whatever that guy brews in the back of his inn, honestly.
Got it.
But yeah, so he has this talk with Renfrey, and she. What do they talk about?
Does she suggest the wizard, or was it the leader?
She does not. Yeah. It is Marilka who does.
Marilka,
Who's this little blonde girl who comes and offers him a coin for his monster.
Yes, and then suggests that he goes to go visit the wizard if he's looking to sell.
Because he uses it for elixirs or whatever. Because apparently it's the wrong type of monster. The wrong
type of monster.
From the one that the alderman posted about.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of surprising to me. I don't know if Geralt just brought in a random monster.
He said there was a sign, right? Some sort of a...
Yeah, there was a flyer posted, but Marilka mentioned it being for something else. Mm-hmm. And so he brought the Ekimora. And she says that, well, the alderman isn't going to pay shit for that, yeah. But the wizard might. But, I mean, we find out anyway later that this may have been a ruse anyway.
Thinking so.
Like, she was probably trying to just steer him toward the wizard.
Yes.
Whom we find out is named Stregobor.
Stregobor. The wizard. So they head over to the wizard's hideout.
Mm-hmm.
And we get some cool little magic.
Yes.
When he tries to enter...
Yeah, so there's like an illusion of a door where there isn't actually a door, because I guess if you can do magic, who needs doors?
Right.
Real fake doors. but yeah, so Geralt waltzes right through. He seems pretty familiar with magic. And then inside we see a bunch of like fair maidens picking berries or something nude.
Nude, yes. Yes. I had a similar hideout in Skyrim.
Of course he did.
Yes.
Because when you have magic, why not?
Why not?
That's kind of the wizard equivalent of having like a skimpy poster in your college dorm. Like I just have a bunch of illusory women walking around doing stuff.
Just doing whatever, right? They were like picking berries and doing chores. He's got a pretty sweet hideout. And the wizard reveals that he wants Geralt to kill the human Renfrey.
Mm-hmm. Among other things, the show does kind of throw a lot at us.
Yeah.
In the beginning, like lots of places, lots of people, lots of things, lots of nouns.
Basically. Lots of nouns, yes.
But yeah, one of the big things that he mentions is that he's sort of working against this prophecy. Like there's a prophecy about women born during a total eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to kill them all because some of them will apparently bring about the end of mankind.
Right.
But I mean, Geralt responds to this saying like, you know, he's probably heard tons and tons of prophecies in the past.
Sure.
He's like, it doesn't rhyme. Like
rhyme.
Any good prophecy worth its salt is going to rhyme. Stregobor kind of beats this point home that that Renfrey is a killer, a murderer who tortures animals, which is interesting to me because like moments later when he was talking to Marilka, the little blonde girl who led him there, she mentioned both killing a rat and killing her own dog for a few coins. So it's like, And we know that she works for Stregobor.
Yeah.
He says so. So, like, he's accusing Renfri of having these, like, psychopathic traits that Marilka clearly has herself.
His own little friend, whatever that is.
Yeah, so I think that might also be something, like, maybe if I'm Geralt and I'm in this situation, I'm like, well, he's just, like, projecting it to try and get me to kill Renfri for some other reason or what have you.
Yeah.
But who knows?
And Geralt mentioned something about how he's a monster hunter, but he doesn't kill humans.
Indeed.
Right? He's got like a code. And that if given the choice between two evils, he tends to choose none.
He'd rather not choose at all. Like if he has to choose between the lesser evil or the greater evil, he just prefer not to choose.
Right.
Which makes sense to me. At least as a, like, I can understand that sort of point of view, but if this show is anything like the video games that I've played, that's probably not really an option.
Yeah, right.
The only way to not make a choice is to not play the game, or what is it? The only winning move is not to play. Is that from that 80s movie? You
know what I'm talking about? I don't know.
I think, what is it? War Games, or it's where there's an AI who takes over the nuclear arsenals.
Sounds fun. Maybe we'll have to do that podcast next.
There you go. Once we do
watching
80s movies.
Watching 80s
movies.
It's
like War Games.
All right. So yeah, it seems like Stregobor was summoning Geralt over because he wants to kill Renfri.
Yes.
Because he's hiding from Renfri, right? That's why he's in his tower, in his hideout.
I think he's in his tower because he's a wizard and any wizard worth his salt hides out in a tower. I don't know. I feel like we don't have the whole story on why he's hiding in episode one.
It sounds like Renfri is he's scared of her.
That's true.
As much as she's...
He does say that no man is a match for her or whatever.
Yeah.
With a sword.
Right. And that he's killed. So I think there were 60 girls born on that day
under the
black moon or something.
The black sun.
Black sun. And he's killed darn near all of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Because of some prophecy that he knows about.
And he claims somehow that he did autopsies and verified that they were beasts.
That they were mutants.
Mutants.
Yes. Which is also a term that applies to Geralt. He's a mutant, as he says a few times in the episode. So.
How about Geralt, when he walks in there, he goes from disheveled to like very nice and cleaned up.
Oh, did
you notice that?
I did not.
He had like
that.
Really disheveled hair. In the bar scene and walking over there, he's kind of a mess. But then when he walked into the hideout, he's all like perfectly, his hair is perfectly done.
Huh. I hadn't noticed that.
It was like it was part
actually.
Of the illusion or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then,
it's a production error.
Or that. And then Stregobor mentions that magic is ineffective on Renfri.
Yes. And he says that that's impossible for humans.
Yes.
So as far as Geralt knows, that shouldn't be the case. So, and that reinforces Stregobor's assertion that Renfri is some kind of aberration, some kind of mutant or something.
Interesting.
Yes.
He decides he doesn't want to help the wizard because he'd rather not, get involved.
It's also not really his job. He's not a hitman.
No, he's not. Right.
He's a monster hunter. And like one thing that I know about Geralt is like he's basically... in this like really dark, pretty horrible Game of Thronesy style world. But he's just trying to do the best he can, he's not like going out of his way to help, the downtrodden or lift up the weak or whatever.
Yeah. He's just,
but he's not trying to cause trouble. He's trying to do honest work for honest pay.
Exactly.
And that just try and minimize as much harm as he can with his own actions.
Just a simple monster hunter.
That's the life, really. But yeah, so he leaves. He goes and sets up a camp and has a conversation with his horse, Roach. Talks about what the first monster he kills, which it sounds like was actually a dude.
Yeah.
A human.
Mm-hmm.
He says, like, not 50, like he had basically just graduated, I guess, from Witcher Hogwarts at Kaer Morhen. And So there's a dude, like a bandit, I guess, assaulting some noble girl.
Yeah, younger girl, right?
And he kills the guy in two strokes, which weren't clean, but effective.
Effective.
Apparently the girl was so horrified at the sight of it that she, you know, puked and fainted. And he was just like, I mean, the I guess that's kind of expressing the thanks he gets for right. doing a trying to be the good guy, trying to uphold the law and justice and whatnot.
Yeah, he seems like he's got a good heart from what I can gather so far. But he seems like he's trying to do the right thing.
Yeah,
but the world thinks he's a monster, so they shun him.
Absolutely. And so he's like, why? I guess for what it seems like is why would he bother going out of his way for everyone else when they're all just assholes?
Right, right. Noticing a theme of humans are often the bigger monsters mm-hmm. than actual monsters.
And Stregobor actually, I think, brings up a good point to that effect. He says something like, you know, the Ekimora feeds because it's hungry or kills because it's hungry. Humans kill because, you know, they're evil because they like it or because,
sure,
you know, they have other selfish motivations,
yeah.
which makes them, in his view, worse than monsters.
Yeah.
Geralt, I'm not sure, agrees, or maybe he does agree, but he still doesn't want to go down that path.
He just wants to sell his monster and move on.
Yep. Can a guy, some days you just can't get rid of a monster.
then we cut to a different area, and we meet this royal family.
Yes.
At a feast, talking about an impending attacking army.
In the kingdom of Sintra.
Sintra.
Yes.
So that is separate from
Blaviken.
Yeah. Blaviken.
There's a lot of places.
Yeah.
And so it, like, unlike Game of Thrones, where you have like the seven kingdoms rule over the whole continent or whatever, I feel like the world in this show has a lot more like small kingdoms, like, you know, where basically your kingdom might be no bigger than a town or whatever, mm-hmm. but you're still fighting all the neighboring, you know, townships for dominance. And there are some bigger empires and kingdoms. Sintra, I feel like, is one of the larger cities. And then they're being attacked by the Empire Nilfgaard.
Those Nilfgaardians?
Yeah.
They're savages. We'll get to that.
As far as we know. We don't know much about them, really.
Yeah, so they we've got this nice feast. You meet the young princess. What was her name? Ciri?
Cirilla.
Cirilla?
Mm-hmm. Ciri for short.
Ciri for short, okay. And then her grandparents, the king and queen.
Yes. They're having a feast, like a party. And the king mentions he wants that there's like a
entertaining some guests.
Mm-hmm. There's a court mage there too, like a wizardly dude who works for them.
Yeah.
Mousesack is his name.
Mousesack.
Yeah.
It's an unfortunate name. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
his brother was Ratsack.
Yeah. he doesn't seem to give a rat's ass about it. So
the queen is basically saying that the Nilfgaardians would never dare attack. And yeah. then she gets
she's pretty
scout.
Confident.
She's confident that no, the attack won't
and
happen.
Then before she even gets up from this table, like one of her dudes comes by and is like, hey, our scouts showed that Nilfgaard's heading this way. So we're boned.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, there's this definitely sense of impending tragedy, and like Ciri has this conversation with her about how when the Queen Calanthe was her age, she had already like conquered some other kingdom or something. She
right.
she'd won some battle. She was already like a warrior king or warrior queen. And Ciri is by contrast very like sheltered and inexperienced, certainly not a warrior by any means.
Yeah. So. She's young. She's, mm-hmm. just starting out.
So we keep saying the name of this character, and I think it's activating all of Joe's Apple devices.
We're not talking to you, Ciri. We're talking about Cirilla.
Yes.
Not even close to the same thing.
But anyway, Calanthe tells Ciri to have go dance with some dude who asks her, I guess, some noble boy or what have you. And she goes and joins the party.
So I guess any young boy can just request a dance with the young princess. Well, and she has to oblige.
He's probably a noble and therefore a possible either like a subject who, you know, as queen, she would want to stay on the good side of, or maybe a marriage prospect. It's, you know, who knows?
So they dance. Indeed. And the queen decides to not let Ciri know that the Nilfgaards are coming. Let her have this last night of
peace.
Of peace.
Yeah.
It's the last night of peace she'll have in a long time. But
I think Calanthe's expression kind of says it all when she's like, if Nilfgaard's coming here, then we're in trouble.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we'll see later in this episode how that conflict turns out.
Well, we'll stay tuned. I think we already talked about this, but back in the woods, Geralt's in the woods with and Renfri shows up when he's talking to his horse. You'd mentioned he was talking to the horse, and Renfri overhears him talking to his horse.
Yes.
And she asks, "What are you doing?" And he admits that he's talking to his horse.
Well, yeah. Is that weird? I feel like if I was in his position, I'd talk to my horse too.
Yeah, you're alone in the woods hunting monsters.
Your horse probably appreciates it.
Probably. Yeah. It's like when people talk to their dog.
Yeah.
I assume people do that.
I don't know.
I don't have a dog to talk to right now.
You did it with someone.
I would talk
people
to
talk
dog.
To their animals. It's not weird. I talk to myself.
I have great
conversations with myself.
Yeah.
You talk to your kids?
I talk to my kids sometimes.
That's weird.
On rare occasion.
Okay.
Yeah, when I'm really desperate for conversation.
Like they're going to validate you.
And he's talking with Renfri, and they basically talk about she knows that Stregomor wants Geralt to kill her.
Yes.
But she's giving him kind of her side of the story.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. She's like basically calling point for point what Stregobor might have told Geralt. And she's basically saying, you know, here's my version. I was acting in self-defense.
Yeah. She was just a girl who was born.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing she knows, she's trying to get killed. She gets raped and I guess left for dead, basically, in the woods, right?
Yeah.
She's raped and left alone.
And kills a dude
for herself.
With her mother's brooch, I guess.
Yeah.
This is basically the other side of the moral dilemma that Geralt is placed in with this quest he's on, this like side quest. I guess it would be a secondary quest in the game where, like, you know, somebody has asked you to kill a girl and you go meet the girl and the girl's like, well, you should kill him instead. And he has to choose which one he wants to side with.
Is that part of the game? You have to decide.
Basically every quest is a decision.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Between, you know, an asshole and a douchebag, or a douchebag and a giant douche and a turd sandwich kind of thing.
So that, okay. So what he said, where he's talking about given the choice between a bigger evil and a lesser evil, he tends to choose neither.
Mm-hmm.
The game, they basically make you choose one or the other. It's kind of a common.
I mean, you could just like turn off the quest indicator and just go
nobody's
pick
doing
flowers
that.
Or something.
Sure.
But yeah, she, and she even uses some of the same phrases. She tells him, you know, that killing Stregobor would be the lesser evil,
right,
which is exactly what Stregobor told him about Renfri. So, you know, Geralt's in a tough position. Like, maybe there's a prophecy about this girl and she's going to bring about the end of the world. Maybe he's a corrupt wizard and he's murdering children.
It's a very literal he said, she said.
Yes.
So, yeah, he basically, Geralt tells Renfri that either he's not going to kill her as long as she leaves, right? You can leave and live.
Yeah, so he's giving her basically the option to eliminate this quandary that he's in by having her leave. I mean, and so that way she no longer has to get revenge on Stregobor, or it means that she would have to forego her revenge on Stregobor, but it means that she would get to live, Stregobor would get to live, and we all get to be happy, but we don't all get to be happy. That's just nonsense.
Not in this world.
This ain't J.R.R. Tolkien's medieval fantasy.
So then we get the battle scene of the Nilfgaardians.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty brutal.
Yes. So Nilfgaard attacks. The king and queen are apparently like battle king and queen. They're like right in the front lines. Right, they're like
at the front lines, which I thought was kind of nuts.
I thought that was surprising as well. But hey, I mean, maybe that's just how they do it, you know? Stand by their people sort of idea.
Yeah, she seems like a pretty strong and capable queen.
That is definitely true.
Go get her.
Mm-hmm. She's going to go places, that one.
And then at one point, somebody says, "We're losing," to give you the indication that they're losing.
Yeah, in case you couldn't tell just all the violence going on. And there's so I don't know, they really like to drive in that violence in there. You know, it feels very maybe not over the top, but it definitely feels graphic, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what I'm trying to say. Just more violence than I might have expected.
Yeah. It was pretty depicted. Graphic. Yeah. Like axes through the head, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then an arrow through the eye.
Yep. Of queen or
the king.
King. He feels like the queen because I feel like Calanthe's really in charge.
It seems that way.
But yeah, he takes an arrow in his left eye. And I think at that point, you know,
that's really the worst eye, the left eye.
And yeah, she takes a minute to mourn him. She like screams and then, you know, goes right back at it.
Starts... And we see it was like this guy in black armor from a horse on horseback.
Yes.
Who's
apparently the leader of the Nilfgaardians.
Apparently. Yeah.
But yeah, so She goes at that point. Does it cut back to?
I think it goes back to the castle.
Okay, yeah, with Ciri and Mousek.
Mousek and some other. Who was the other? Like the head.
She has her own personal guard. Yeah, whose that guy. Name escapes me now. Laszlo or something like that. I think.
And she's saying that they're both so boring.
Yeah, I do like appreciate. Even though like the dialogue is, I feel a little shaky here. I do appreciate what Mousek is trying to like impart to Ciri that like this is a serious situation. You know, we might seem boring, but like people are dying.
He talks about
princesses getting
locked in towers
and killed. And
killed,
which I
the end.
Which seems like a reference to what Stregobor was talking about.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So like maybe he knows Stregobor. I don't know. And
maybe he knows
aware of this.
Ciri was born on a
under an eclipse.
Yeah, perhaps.
Do we know that she was?
We don't.
Okay.
But I don't know. I have a feeling. Based on what we see later in the episode, but we can talk about that. Yeah, and then the queen returns mortally wounded.
Yes. Or at least wounded.
Quite wounded.
Mm-hmm.
Severely, we'll say severely wounded.
Yeah, she definitely tries to reassure Ciri, who's like...
And she's coughing blood
starting to freak out, yeah. Yeah. And she tells her that, you know, when she goes, it's going to be way more dramatic than all this.
Yeah.
Which, you know, might actually be a bit of a portent because I feel like it is a bit dramatic when it happens, but...
A little bit, yeah. And then the Mousek creates a force field.
Yes,
covering the whole tower.
We see him do magic.
Yes, so magic is very much present in this show.
Mm-hmm. And we learn sort of... A little bit of the rules of how the magic works. Like Ciri asks him how long will it'll hold. And he says, it'll hold as long as I hold. Like it takes some sort of physical exertion on his part to maintain that spell. So I think, I get the feeling we're going to learn more about how the magic of this world works as the show goes on.
Right.
But yeah.
I guess we'll find out, but are there rules that say there can only be one wizard? Is it like a rooster situation? Why wouldn't you just have a whole bunch of wizards?
I think it's more like you have to be sort of one of the few like educated, privileged magic users to be a wizard.
Yeah.
Like and I don't think it's something that just anybody could do.
Got it. You have to be
kind of have to be like force sensitive.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Got to be a Jedi.
Uh-huh. Makes sense.
Yeah. At least that's what it seems like to me, I guess.
So he's holding the force field.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut back to Geralt and Renly.
Yes, Renfrey.
Renfrey.
Yes.
And she,
we'll just say all the names wrong on purpose.
Perfect, yeah.
Gerald hangs out with Renly Baratheon.
And she tells him that she's decided to leave.
Yes, which to me doesn't sound entirely genuine, but who knows? Maybe he managed to convince her.
I didn't believe her at first, but then she started getting really seductive. Yeah. And then I was like, okay.
Anytime, you know, a woman starts making out with a stranger for no reason.
Yeah, that generally means that she's being genuine.
Being sincere,
right? Yeah. they have a nice little intimate...
A tryst.
Tryst. And then cut back to the wizard, Mouse Sack. You can't make that name up. I mean, I guess you can because somebody did. And then they're shooting just a barrage of fire arrows. Mm-hmm. And one of them ends up penetrating through the force field.
So, you know, the force field's weakening.
It's weakening, right? Yeah.
And then eventually they do wind up breaking it. And he starts. He goes to Calanthe and says, like, you know, they breached the gate. They're getting in the castle. It's too late. What are we going to do? And she says something like, it's time.
It's time.
And there's lots of talk of destiny. One of her dudes, I don't know his name, but he's like the same guy who reported to her about the scouts seeing Nilfgaard. He like goes down the halls and starts handing out bottles.
Well, she gives the order when she says it's time. Mm-hmm. She gives the impression that there's like some sort of a secret weapon in the keep, mm-hmm. right? Somebody goes down there to look
in the gatehouse.
In the gatehouse, okay. Uh-huh. But then it turns out he's not there.
Yes,
whatever that was.
Right.
And then they realize
we probably won't find out what that
never.
Means.
I think that's probably the last we'll ever hear that.
Yeah,
nothing important.
But she gives like Ciri some like last minute advice, like, you know, you're going to be a queen, you got to be merciful and you got to be cool and you got to, like, you know, don't be a dick, that sort of thing.
I think that was like verbatim.
And then, and then you got to go find Geralt of Rivia for whatever reason.
It's your destiny.
Go find Geralt.
And Geralt is your destiny. And then she's sent away and she kind of shrieks like a demon. It was a weird scream.
Yeah, she's a soprano.
Is that what it is? Okay, that makes perfect sense.
No, but yeah, she screams and like the glasses shake and everybody kind of like stops for a second and is like, okay. And then
no one seems too surprised by
it. It's not till she leaves that Mousek says kind of something to Calanthe. Is like they sort of look at each other and like, I saw it too. Like there's something going on. And then as I think Laszlo is escorting Ciri from the city, trying to escape, she keeps asking him questions like, why was I protected? Why is my destiny all important? Why am I saving the world? Like, what is going on?
And then he says, well, I'll tell you. And then he gets shot.
Shot right in the neck.
Right in his talking neck. And then, like you said, the guard was going room by room, handing out poison.
I said bottles. You told everyone that it's poison.
Okay,
I was
sure.
Trying to build up the drama.
Of course. We don't know what's in the bottle.
I do like how he gives it to this one dude. He offers three bottles to this one dude who just takes two of them.
Yeah.
He gives one to his wife who poisons their son bed, which is
terrible.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that scene from Titanic where like the ship is sinking and there's like a mom like reading bedtime stories to her kid in their cabin.
Yeah.
Like it's like, well, we're going to die. So like go to sleep so you don't have to worry about it or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Nilfgaardians are coming. Calanthe said that they don't take prisoners. So it's not going to be good. They're being tortured.
Brutal.
And she lays out to Ciri the brutal details of what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. And as she's saying it, you get to see them just tearing the townspeople apart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, it kind of makes sense that these nobles are like, well, this is going to suck. So we might as well just die.
Poison's a quick,
Except that dude who only took two bottles for some reason. And I don't understand this really.
Yeah.
Thought it would be preferable to give his wife and child the poison and then stab himself in the neck.
Sounds
with
way
like
worse.
A letter opener.
Which
does sound way worse.
Yeah. I mean, you could just have the Nilfgaardian stab you in the neck. I mean, it's basically.
I'm sure they'd do it.
So then, the princess is escaping. And then we see the black, the man in black armor approaching.
Yes. with a feather on his helmet.
Yeah, the feather on the helmet.
So he comes and he nabs up Ciri, right?
Well, you just kind of see him, and then we cut back away to Geralt having a little love scene with Renfri.
And he also has like a hallucination, like a vision or some such.
Yeah, and she's kind of speaking in prophecy. She's saying
That
the little girl in the woods is your destiny. You have to find her. She'll be waiting for you or something.
Super weird. Like Renfri has prophecy powers now or something.
Yeah. And that's the last thing you want to hear when you're making love to Renfri. You're talking about some little girl who's your destiny. I don't know. So it's like post love scene.
Post-coital prophecy.
He wakes up and he's got words kind of echoing in his mind, and he hears the market. You're in the market.
Realizes that Renfri's gone, and figures she must have gone to the market to do dirty deeds
to do Stregobor. Something. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
And so he's like, "Well, I got to catch up to her because can't let her kill him for some reason."
Yeah,
I don't know why. I don't know why he feels he has to get involved at all at that point. You know, like
Well,
he turned them both down for their assassination missions, right?
Yeah.
So why not let them go at each other and just see what happens?
Just see what happens. Yeah, let it play out.
Nah, he's too good for that. He does make a choice. Yeah, he makes a choice.
He does make a choice.
As Stregobor points out to him. I guess he chooses to side with Stregobor, not to kill Renfri, but to stop Renfri from carrying out her revenge, which she said she was totally not going to give up trying to do.
Yeah. So I my understanding of Renfri's plan is that she was going to start offing citizens and kind of force Stregobor out of his hideout.
Yeah.
Attack
his tower and try and get him to come out. So when Geralt arrives in Blaviken, he runs into a bunch of her dudes, and they have a message from Renfri to him that here's your ultimatum, because they said something about an ultimatum earlier.
Yeah.
And so he's like giving him all these lines that he had already discussed with Renfri so that he knows, you know, what the deal is. And then so they try to stop him from intervening in the fight. He takes them all out with this very flashy sort of underhand grip sword battle, which is I don't know how I felt about that whole sword battle. I don't what did you think? What I'm talking about?
Yeah, I didn't really have an issue with it. Those goons were asking for trouble.
Sure, yeah. I mean, just like from like a choreography standpoint, it seemed a little like, who fights with a sword like that? Like, for real? I don't know. It might have been more style than substance, I felt like.
Yeah.
And then there's CGI, wounds and stuff that are a little...
You want more practical effects. You want actual human limbs lopped off.
It's not that I want it to be practical effects over CGI. I just don't want to I don't want it to be obvious that it's CGI. I want better CGI or better whatever the effect is.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but they actually digitally removed his mustache on Geralt.
Damn it.
And you couldn't even tell.
Henry Cavill and his need to have a mustache in every role.
He refuses to shave for any role. He's fighting off Renfri's goons, kills all of them.
Pretty handily, too.
Yeah.
I don't think he even really takes any hits. Yeah.
But then, Renfri comes out.
She's got Marilka held hostage.
Yeah.
At which point it's like, well, Marilka's kind of a psycho, so...
Killing dogs.
Yeah, maybe you should do the world a favor. And I don't know. She's on the path to being a serial killer herself,
She aspires to be a witcher, it sounded like.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear that she doesn't understand quite what that entails.
Right.
And Geralt doesn't even indulge her because, that's just not something you're going to want to get into.
Yeah.
I think mostly she wants some sort of adventure or, she mentions Geralt as a hero and sort of wants to be an adventurer, even though Geralt knows just how glorious that life ain't.
Right. So he ends up fighting Renfri, and he keeps kind of pinning, pinning her, that basically winning, but not killing her. You know, he doesn't want to kill her, clearly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have this little display of, like, you know, various cool ways to hold your sword. That they keep getting in these, like, little sword locks with like, weird grip styles and stuff. So, you know.
Yeah. And at one point he tries to use magic on her.
Yes.
She says magic doesn't work on her.
He uses one of his signs. So witchers have these, like, mini spells.
Okay.
That they cast called signs. And the one he tried to convince her is called Axie. It's for, like, messing with people's minds.
Mm.
And she recognizes it immediately and is like, that doesn't work on me, which confirms Stregobor's whole complaint that she might be some kind of monster.
Yeah. Well, she goes a step further and says it's silver.
That's right.
Right.
And he's like, silver's for monsters. Blah, blah, blah.
So earlier when she said she didn't know if she was a monster, I think we can assume that she she knew better.
And yeah, so just a point of clarification. When he says that, like, silver's for monsters, witchers generally carry two long swords on them.
Hmm.
One of them is steel and one is silver. The steel one is for fighting people and the silver one's for fighting monsters.
Makes sense.
Because, you know, silver hurts things that aren't natural.
Couldn't you potentially use a silver sword to kill a human?
Yeah, but silver is a really shitty metal for making swords.
Got it.
It doesn't hold an edge well. It's really the only reason you would want a silver sword is if you're fighting something that, like, burns on contact with silver.
Got it. Apparently it's antimicrobial.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, there, maybe that's part of it. Microbes are monsters.
I bet that's what it is.
They're the real
now
monsters.
Now we figured it out. Renfri says that, they made both of us. We're not so different. So Renfri, yes. I think, has a lot. She was playing coy earlier when she was saying she doesn't know if she's a monster. I think she knows damn well.
I think she knows
what's going
something,
on.
Something, yeah.
But yeah, she basically says that they're kind of both cut from the same cloth. They're very similar.
Geralt's probably like, not another one. I don't need somebody else telling me we're not so different.
They fight and she pretty much forces Geralt to kill her.
Yeah, she keeps coming at him. Even though he tries to just, like, peacefully rebuff as much as possible until at some point he makes her stab herself in the neck.
Yep. And then her dying words are, the girl in the woods is his destiny.
Yeah. Interesting.
And then we cut back to, Princess Ciri, riding captive with the man in black armor.
Yes.
And then she once again shrieks and
it's like a super shriek.
Yeah. Knocks falls off the horse.
Yeah. There's this big, like, stone obelisk or something that falls over.
Yeah. Then she, like, summons some gigantic structure from the ground.
And she's her scream, like, she creates a fissure between the two of them.
Yeah.
Which is pretty crazy. Like, to have, like, that's a pretty powerful magic stuff to not really know what you're doing and just screaming.
Just screaming. Yeah.
Ciri has some kind of powers and she uses them to escape. And the dude's like, what? Like, I thought, how did that happen?
Right.
So, you know, there's obviously something to Ciri's nature that makes her, like, politically relevant, because it seems like the Nilfgaardians had come specifically to capture her as, like a weapon or something.
Yeah, we're aware of who she is, what she's capable of.
And Calanthe and Mousesack seem to corroborate that as well. They seem to know something about her that she doesn't.
Did we see Mousesack die?
No, we did not.
We did not.
We did see Calanthe die.
Yes.
Dramatically.
She was all about the drama.
As she fell from, she pulled a, what's his name? King Tommen?
Oh, yeah.
From Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh.
Spoilers for Game of Thrones. Sorry.
Yeah, we spoil everything on this podcast. Sorry about that.
Spoilers abound.
And we cut to Stregobor looking over Renfri's dead body.
Yeah, he's saying we need to do an autopsy. We need to do some science, some magic science to figure out all this nonsense. And Geralt isn't having it.
Geralt's not hearing any of that science talk.
He's pretty angry, which is also interesting because earlier in the episode, Stregobor made, like, an offhand comment about witchers having the emotions removed from them as part of their training or whatever. Mm. Apparently that's not the case because
he certainly seems
Geralt
to have some emotions.
Does seem a bit emotional.
For sure. Stregobor also mentions that Renly could make people do things. That's how she kind of manipulated those goons to kind of do her bidding.
Could be.
How do we know that Geralt isn't under her little spell?
If there is a spell. It could be Stregobor just saying stuff.
Could be. At this point, I'm pretty confident that Renfri had some powers.
Could be. When we see Geralt use his powers, there's like, you know, some like sparks, you know, some little magic coming out. We never saw Renfri do anything like that.
She did have a little love scene with him.
That's true.
I don't know what exactly happened there. There's a lot of prophecies taking place. That's a
good point.
You know, I would say he's under her spell.
So there's probably, some kind of magic. Well, yeah, at the same time, we don't really know the details. And I think that's intentional.
Right.
That like, and Stregobor even mentions, like, you made a choice and you're not going to know if it's the right one. You're just going to have to live with it. You don't get all the answers. That's not what kind of show this is. and one thing I can say about Witcher 3, the video game, is it's very similar. Like, sometimes you do a quest, you don't know if what you did was actually the right thing or what consequences it's going to have, but you do your best.
Yeah, I'm going to have to play this Witcher 3 video.
You should.
I want to. And then, yeah, Stregobor basically turns the town against Geralt, even though Geralt kind of saved the day. Well, now he's...
Did he save the day? He killed a bunch of people.
He meant well.
Yeah, but like from their perspective, he basically just killed a bunch of townsfolk and a woman. And then Stregobor came out and was like, right. you're a butcher.
Well, like I said, if Stregobor kind of manipulated the situation, I think.
But it wasn't hard to manipulate.
No, certainly not.
That's kind of the point I'm trying to make.
So then they start stoning him, which was part of the prophecy. I remember hearing somebody say stones would be thrown at you, be covered in blood.
I mean, Geralt, I feel like, is the kind of guy who probably gets stones thrown at him a lot. But I think that's a pretty safe prophecy to make. People will not like you because you are different.
And he's getting ready to probably kill everybody. But then the little girl, the dog killer,
Marilka,
looks at him. And she's upset with him, and she tells him to leave and never come back. Harsh words.
Run away, Simba, and never return. Yeah. So I think Marilka is definitely kind of a manipulator as well. I think she's learning from Stregobor.
Yeah.
At least that's the sense.
You think so? Yeah. Or is she just being manipulated by Stregobor?
I mean, both.
Yeah.
I don't think those are mutually exclusive.
Mm.
You know, the manipulator, the manipulatee becomes the manipulator sort of thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure. That old phrase.
But yeah, so this is the story of how he gets one of his common monikers as the Butcher of Blaviken.
Oh, yeah. The Butcher of Blaviken. So
that'll come up at some point. It's like from what I played in the video games, it's a pretty common for people to refer to him as the Butcher of Blaviken. So I guess this episode is why.
There you go.
He butchered people.
And that's the first episode.
Yep.
Overall, I really enjoyed it. I think the sign of a good show is after the first episode, it leaves you wanting more.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to watch more.
Totally. I enjoyed it too. I think the first episode, you know, we just got done doing HBO's Watchmen, and I do feel like there is like switching to The Witcher right after that. There's this sort of like difference in quality that, you know, not to say that The Witcher is bad or anything, but it's different, you know, like the effects are different. The writing is different. And so I kind of had to get used to it. So I wasn't 100% sold on the first episode, but I do, like you said, I do still want to watch more. So,
well, you have watched more. You've already reviewed that.
I have, yes. But the point I'm trying to make is, having watched the first one, I still wanted to watch more when I was done.
Yes.
So it passes that test, even if like, I would say it's flawed, but enjoyable.
You mentioned similarities to Game of Thrones, and it reminded me a lot of Game of Thrones, where you're kind of just dumped in this world, and I had no familiarity really, other than it's the video game. So it took a lot of the names and places. It took me a lot to kind of focus on that. And,
sure.
But I enjoyed it, and I am very eager to watch episode 2.
Indeed. So yeah, we'll come at you next week, I guess, or whenever with
Yeah.
Our second episode of watching The Witcher, watching Witcher. Witcher watching.
Witcher watching? Watching Witcher. Yeah. Stay tuned. We'll come out with a new episode every week. Mm-hmm. And next week, episode 2.
If you haven't seen HBO's Watchmen, go ahead and check that one out. We also did a podcast on that called Watching Watchmen.
Fantastic show.
Which you can find at our website.
OneDrinkIn.com.
Yep. You can follow us on Twitter and follow all our social media from there. And yeah, we have other things in the pipe coming down toward you as well. So check stay us
tuned.
Out.
Thank you for listening and stay tuned.
We are one drink in.
We are one drink in.
Out.